On 19th of February, we went to the Queen Elizabeth II Conference Centre in Westminster for a big rally that was organised by Grassroots Out. There were lots of people on the stage. Some of them came as surprise guests, others we knew about in advance. I was lucky enough to get a seat near the front so I could see what was going on. I think there were nearly 2,000 people there, so it was a really very, very big meeting, very impressively organised. The sound system, as you will hear, sort of seemed to come and go in places, actually. So my apologies for the fact that the sound quality isn't always as good as it could be, but you can hear the vast majority of what's going on here. Then came another Conservative Member of Parliament. This is David Davis, one of the real veterans of the Conservative Eurosceptic cause. He's held ministerial office, former Shadow Home Secretary, represents a Yorkshire constituency, an absolutely marvellous orator. He was on top form this evening, and I think I found him one of the most interesting. So anyway, here's David Davis, Member of Parliament.
I've never done a speaker at trailers before. You know, the chairman said, told you that I used to be the Shadow Home Secretary. And in that job, I used to have to go and speak to a lot of unusual audiences. One of the more difficult ones was going to speak to prisoners in prisons. He used to give me a problem about how I could start. You know, standing in Wandsworth Prison, it's a privilege to be here, didn't really work. and looking at a bunch of rapists and murderers and frauds and so on, you know, it's an honour to speak to you didn't work either. So I came up with a formula which, looking at you lot, would work here, actually. And it was, I'm so pleased to see so many of you here. I say that because earlier this evening, I was one of several hundred people who were locked out by the health and safety police from this meeting because there are too many of you to fit in. You're above the fire standard. So I say something about the organisation, so well done all of you for getting here. Particularly because the time has come. The time has come for our nation to make the greatest decision of our generation, for our nation to stand on its own two feet, and for our nation to take control of its own destiny. And before we talk about that, I'd like to start by getting rid of the inferiority complex that our political opponents in this argument seem to suffer from. They don't believe in our country. I'd like you all to remember, everybody in this room, just remember how lucky you are. How lucky you are to be born in this country. Because we are an incredibly fortunate country. And we, how would you expect a country of 60 million people, a tiny island off the cold northwest shore of Europe, to be as important, as powerful, as influential, as wealthy, to have as much reach as Britain does? We are a permanent member of the UN Security Council. We're a leading member of the G7. We're a leading member of the Commonwealth. We're a leading NATO member, America's favourite ally. And we, of course, we're widely respected worldwide. All of that before we join the European Union. And why? Well, because we're the country of William Shakespeare and Isaac Newton, of Faraday and Rutherford, of Charles Darwin and Alexander Fleming. We're the country that created, that started the Industrial Revolution. Our language, the English language, is the dominant international language in science, engineering, medicine, the internet, TV and film, if you count American, international commerce, even international law. You know, it's amazing. All those Russian oligarchs come and sort out their arguments in the Royal Courts of Justice. So, we have all that. But above all of this, we created the first liberal democracy in the modern world. We are the first democracy. And again, we did this before we joined the EU. So we are different. And this is something I noticed when I was a Europe Minister. We are different. Remember the origins of not everybody else's, but most of the other countries' involvement in the European Union. Germany and France and Italy created the precursor after years of dictatorship and defeat. When Spain joined, it was after the dictator Franco. Portugal, after the dictator Catana. Greece, after the colonels. Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, the entire Eastern European group, after escaping from under the Soviet jackboot. So it's hardly surprising for them that the European Union represents modernity and democracy. That's what they're comparing it with. Democracy for a century and a half before we joined. So we know what it really means. And we know that it isn't just about casting a vote, it's about casting out bad governments. And as you heard me say on there, how do you cast out the European Commission? So we have a problem with the way democracy works in Europe. And this is not an esoteric issue to be discussed in Democracy or Politics 101 or a PPE course. This has real, serious implications. We've had a very good set of recent demonstrations. Look what they did to Greece. For the European elite conspired with a crooked Greek government and Goldman Sachs, with well-known bankers, to bring Greece into the euro wrongfully, on fraudulent numbers.
Yeah.
And who did they punish? Did they punish the crooked Greek government? No, they didn't. Did they punish Goldman Sachs? I don't think so. You saw the advert, didn't you? The simple truth is, they punished the Greek people. They imposed policies on the country that crippled it, cut its economy by a quarter. Not a recession, not a slowdown, not a stop. They cut the size of the economy by a quarter. Unemployment soared, youth unemployment 60%. They took away the chances of an entire generation. But that wasn't all. Hospitals were closed. Food consumption went down by 25%. Children died. Infant mortality went up by 40%. TB rates doubled, HIV up, malaria back. That's what this so-called democratic European Union did to Greece. I'd just like you to imagine for a second, if any British government tried to do something like that to a part of our country, what would happen? Can you imagine if we visited policies like that on Lancashire or Lincolnshire? I speak as a Yorkshireman. Or Lincolnshire. The government will be challenged in Parliament, and if it did put it right, it would fall. But not in Europe. That is the price of not being a real democracy. And what are we being offered today to fix this imperious bureaucracy? A deal will not give power back to Parliament. A deal will not give us control over our own borders. A deal will not protect the City of London. And a deal which will not change the treaty in any way, and as a result, will not limit the European Court from overruling governments and parliaments alike in any country they choose to. And to add to insult to injury today, we have Belgium's proposal that we never be allowed to object to anything ever again. Yeah, my memory may be faulty, but I think I'm right in saying that Napoleon described Belgium as a country invented by the English to embarrass the French. Well, maybe they're trying to get their own back. I suppose we should be used to being threatened. We're a big, powerful country, we should be used to being threatened. We are threatened by Napoleon, threatened by Kaiser, threatened by Hitler, threatened by Brezhnev. You know, threatened by the French and the Germans and the Russians, fine. But by the Belgians? And of course, that's how this campaign is going. I don't know what you call the other side of the argument, the in-crowd, the Remainians, or whatever they're called. But the in-crowd are trying to threaten us too. We're told if we leave, we won't be allowed to trade with the European Union. Really? Really? Under international agreements signed by the EU, tariffs are limited to 5%, except for a couple of categories. Agriculture and cars. Who makes wine and cars? Now, if you want to see why we're guaranteed to get a deal, I want you to answer in your mind two questions. First, who is the most powerful politician in Europe? Angela Merkel. A prize for the man in the front there. Secondly, I don't want you to do this, but metaphorically, I'd like you all to go outside in the road and count up the number of Audis, BMWs, Mercedes, Volkswagens, they're the one with the smoke trail behind them. Count them up. There are over a quarter, nearly a third, actually, it's nearly 30% now, of British cars sold in Britain are from those four makes. And that's not counting the Skodas and the Seats, are also owned by German companies. We're the fastest growing car market in Europe, the second biggest, and we will be the biggest in due course. What do you think will happen the day after Brexit? So Angela Merkel? There'll be the chief executives of all those companies hammering on her door, demanding free access to the British market, for which the price will be free access to their market. So you can assure. Oh, what else is there on Project Fear? Oh, yes. They say that we could not deport criminals back to the UK without the EU. Really? What do they think happened before the EU? They really think that European countries would refuse to deport criminals, terrorists back to the UK? We've got one of the biggest, most powerful anti-terrorist criminal intelligence organisations in Europe, in our country. We are one of the most effective anti-terrorist operators in the Western world. You really think they're not going to negotiate and deal with us over the return of terrorists to the UK? It's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's absolutely, after Paris in particular, it's offensive nonsense.
Yeah.
So I say to all, we have nothing to fear but Project Fear itself. Now, I've got to catch a train, sadly. The door's still closed. But I wanted really to characterise in a British way how I see. I'm sorry, Prime Minister. I wanted to characterise the British way. In a British way, how I really saw what was coming next. And I lit upon an extract, or a poem, in fact, by G.K. Chesterton called The Secret People. It's about us. It's actually about the English, so those of you who are not English, okay. But it's about us, broadly. And I'm just going to read you six lines. They're not in sequence, but I'll read you six lines from that poem, because I think they say something to us. You laugh at us and love us, both mugs and eyes are wet, and you do not know us, for we have not spoken yet. We hear men speaking for us of new laws, strong and sweet. Yet is there no man speaketh as we speak in the street? Smile at us, passers pay us, but do not quite forget, for we are the people of England that have not spoken yet.
Yeah.
The people of England will speak, and the people of Scotland, and Northern Ireland, and Wales, and they will speak in a strong and clear voice, and they will say, give us back our heritage, give us back our future, give us back control of our own country. Thank you.